with her. I inadvertently touched something. Okay. All right. So this is one thing, all right, how they tried to reconcile Yehuda and Binyamin, right? By saying that if it weren't for the fact, this is what Yehuda is saying, that if it weren't for the fact that David spared the life of Shimi ben Gera, right, so then we would find that Mordechai would never have been born. All right. Mishpachas Binyamin, on the other hand, what do the Benjaminites say? Omra, Minai ko osi. They say that he came from me. In other words, Mordechai is one of our own. Rav Omar, Knesset Yisrael Omra le'idach gisa. Right. Rav says, as a matter of fact, the Jewish people, they say just the opposite. Idoch Gisa means the other side or the opposite, okay? Re'u me'osa the Yehudi. Look what Yehudi did to me. Ma'ashilem li Yemini. And what did Yemini, how Yemini repaid me? Me'osa the Yehudi. What did Yehudi do? Says, the low kotli. Oh, that's the next page, okay. All right, let's distribute to those who need it. Okay. Happy that most people by now have texts of their own. Okay. Says the low katle David the Shimi, the Asali Mine, right? In other words, the Asali Mine Mordechai. David did not kill Shimi. Yeah. From him was born Mordechai, the Mikne Beis Haman, who acquired the house of Haman. Remember, that was part of the things that Achashverosh did subsequently when he raised Mordechai to his royal vizier, or whatever the title was. Omashilem li Yemini, right? And look, on the contrary, what the people of Benjamin did that brought harm to the Jewish people. In what way? The lo katle Shaul Agag. Because when Shaul waged his war against the Amalekites, right, and he had the opportunity to kill Agag, right? Yet Shaul did not kill him, he spared his life. And what do we find? He is Yaleid bin Meni Haman. Because as a result, Haman was born from Agag. Right, the Mitzar of Israel, who brought sorrows to the people of Israel. Yeah, Shmuel killed him subsequently. Yeah, right, that's what it's written, correct.
Yeah,
but Shaul spared his life. This is the complaint.
Wasn't he punished for doing that?
Yes, Shaul was punished for it. And the kingdom was taken away from him and given to David subsequently.
Twice they have this. Where's the logic to this? Because Agag must have had his descendants before either Shaul or Shmuel was to kill him. So
you don't know that.
Well,
how do you know that?
Okay.
Let's say we don't know that. All right. So Shaul spears him. In the next minute, Shmuel takes out an axe or something and hews him into pieces. This is what
happened.
Yeah,
right.
Well,
okay.
David. Go home. He was a captive.
David, you're taking it a little too literally.
All right. Okay.
A little too literally.
In
the final analysis, what are they trying to prove about Haman? That he was Haman Ha'agogi. I mean, it's written that he was Ha'agogi, which means that he was from Agag, right?
Well,
now, if you want, you can say, all right, so, which means, in other words, that he was an Amalekite, right? But Agogi actually means then that he was a descendant of Agag. This is what it would mean, right?
Yes, but I take
the man who came from Agag. I'm not saying that he was the son, but the point is that he was a descendant of Agag, and just as Agag wanted to destroy the Jewish people, just as the Amalekites wanted to destroy the people of Israel, so Haman followed the tradition of his heritage. Okay.
Well, my point is, why blame Shaul or the tribe of Benjamin for this? I mean, they had nothing to do with Haman being an Amalekite, right? They had nothing to do with it. They didn't prevent it or cause it.
Again, okay. Shaul was a Benjamite, right?
Correct.
Came from Binyamin. Right. Therefore, if he had done what Shmuel had told him to begin with, then Hamel would never have been born. This is what they're trying to say. Just as the opposite, they said, you know, that if it weren't for the fact that David spared Shimei, so that's the reason why, you know, he was one of the ancestors of Mordechai.
No, okay.
Well, yes. Shaul, this is his whole discussion here.
What are they trying to prove?
They are trying to prove one thing.
It
is important from the point of view that here you have two tribes that are vying with each other one way or another, right? Yechis, exactly.
So why
does the same Pasuk call him, right, Ishuhudi, and then they call him Ishimini? You understand? So this is, look, you have to understand, when it comes to drash, and this is what we're dealing with. We're dealing with drash. Okay. Okay. I had a very wise teacher at least 60 years ago, if not more, okay?
Oh, no.
Yeah. I want to mention his name. His name is Dr. Paul Chertoff, Rabbi Paul Chertoff. Very wise man. Fortunately, he's passed away quite a few years already. At any rate, I think one of his descendants, by the way, is the guy down in Washington who is busy... what is he? He's a lawyer and
Michael.
I'm pretty sure that he is a descendant of Paul Chertoff, probably a grandson or something like
wow.
that. Yeah,
You're
I think
kidding.
So.
He's the
yeah.
head of the whole criminal
right.
investigation.
Right, right.
States.
Yeah. All right.
That's
the I'm pretty sure that that's the Yichus, you know. But at any rate, he said, a rabbi gets up and he gives a drasha, right? He uses a text, but you know what? The text is a pretext.
It's a pretext.
In other words, you take a text and you fashion whichever way you want.
Whatever you want
to
fashion.
Right, right.
Yeah. Well,
yeah.
It's an excuse right. for making the point.
Right, exactly.
It,
right.
And one
yeah.
side spoke for one side, now we're speaking for the other.
You know,
right.
I'm
right.
sorry.
Right. Yeah.
I'm sorry, but what did Shaul do? He did, except for sparing the property, the
yeah.
soil, the cattle,
right. Right.
which had nothing to do with a god and his descendants.
Yeah.
And that was he made war against the Amalekites. He conquered them for whatever.
Yes.
He wiped them out.
Yes.
So there were no Amalekites left
okay.
to give.
The answer is, of course. I mean, that Shaul did not follow to the letter exactly
but
what
God
Shmuel
told
had told
yeah,
him. Of course, Shmuel was the prophet talking in the name of God,
and
right?
And if you were living
no,
in those
no.
days, you would give your argument, and it would have been
right.
in the book, and it would have
right.
been another point.
And
that
is
right.
That's the way it is.
Right.
They're
yeah,
with the
right. Whatever. Okay. All right, please.
Let's go on.
Yeah, we have to remember, we're dealing with drash over here, okay? This is why this
true,
is
this
more
is
the nature of what would be
right,
midrash, okay?
Right,
okay,
right.
All right.
It's true.
Rabbi Yochanan said, Le'yolim b'Binyamin Kasi. The truth is that Mordechai did come from the tribe of Binyamin, Ba'amai Korele Yehudi, so why did they call him a Jew? So the answer is Al Shum Shekofar Bavinizorah. The reason being because he denied idolatry. In other words, he refused to accept idolatry. Shekol HaKofar Bavinizorah Nikro Yehudi. Because whoever denies idolatry, in other words, he refused to accept idolatry, so Nikro Yehudi, he is called a Jew. Kidesiv, as we find the Pasuk. Iti guvrin yehudim. I say guvrin yehudim. Okay. It's written in the book of Daniel, remember, that Nebuchadnezzar made a statue of himself, right? And he ordered everybody at a certain time to bow down before him, right? And when that time came, everybody bowed down. Remember, we had a reference before that even the Jews also bowed down to the Tzelem, right? But the book of Daniel tells us that there were certain people who refused to do it. There were certain men who did not, and of course they were Kanadia, Mishael, and Azariah, right? Otherwise known as Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, right? Okay. But they did not. And what is, and the referral to them is Gurin Yehudayim. They refused to bow down to Avodah Zarah, right? And so therefore from this we learn that a person who refuses to accept Avodah Zarah, who refuses to bow down to idolatry, he is a Jew. Okay? All right, I think I shall stop at this point because I'm anxious to get back to this. And, okay. Tonight is the 26th of December, 2001. Yeah. Okay, we are continuing now in Maseches Megillah, Daf Yud Gimel, Amud Aleph. Okay, and we continue from where we left off last week. Just a little reminder, exactly as we heard, you know, that they were trying to reconcile Ishihudi and then Ishimini and Ishihudi, and therefore we had different suggestions as to how to reconcile them. And particularly I like the punchline about the fact that whoever refuses to bow down to idolatry, whoever refuses to accept idolatry, he is a Jew. Okay? And we'll see that the idea is repeated again in a moment. Okay? Alright, so we start from where it says Rabbi Shimon ben Pazi.
Yeah.
Okay? Alright. Rabbi Shimon ben Pazi ki hava pe'otzach b'divrei ha'yomim omar hachi. Alright. Now we've already seen the idea of Pesach in many cases that we had here in the Gemara, namely that it mentions that a certain Rav, when he gave a drasha based upon some verse in another part of the Torah, and he relates it to something that we find in the Megillah. Okay? So in this particular case, the text that he used actually is in Divrei Hayomim, the book of Chronicles.
Mm-hmm.
If you read the book of Chronicles, there are many, many chapters at the beginning which are devoted primarily to genealogy, believe it or not. Genealogy. It starts with Adam and Eve and then it continues. Yeah, right. It goes through various names, okay? So, here they bring the following pasuk, okay? The pasuk says, Kol devorecha echad heim. Right. Well, this is not what it says in the Hayyobim. Just this is the text of his drasha, how he started it, and he said, "All your words represent one unity." The Yonu Yehudin LeDorshon, and we know that as we Chachomim, we know how to expound upon them. All right. So, in other words, I'm going to tell you right now my drush of this particular pasuk that I'm going to cite right now. Okay. It is written, the Ishto HaYehudiyah, right, and his Jewish wife, Yolda es Yered, gave birth to Yered, Avi Gedor, who is the father of Gedor, Vies Hever and Hever, Avi Socho, the father of Socho, Vies Yekusiel, and also Yekusiel, Avi Zanoach, right, and then the passage continues and it says, Vieile b'nei Bisho Basparo, and these are the children, in other words, meaning the descendants of Bityo Bas Paro, in other words, Bityo, very often we call her Batya, right? But in reality, here she's called Bityo, the daughter of Pharaoh, Asher Lokach Mered, okay, which Mered took as his wife.
Is this the same Bityo, Batya, that went back to Exodus 8?
Yeah. In other words, he's now going to give a drash about the character of Bityo Bas Paro. Okay, all right, this is what he's going to talk about. Okay, and he's going to relate every name to a particular idea, particular quality. Okay, this is what we do. I mean, just as you noticed before, that when he gave the genealogy of Mordechai, Ben Yoir, Ben Kish, etc., etc., and each one had a reference to a type of character, you know, which was very fitting, you know, like for example Yair means that Mordechai was the person who gave light to the eyes of the Jewish people and things like that, okay? So what about this lady, okay? So he says, Amai Korolo Yehudiyah, number one, why was she called Yehudiot? It says his Jewish wife, right? So why was she called Jewish? After all, she was Egyptian, right?
Her name was Bakhti.
Yeah, so why was she called Yehudiot? So the answer is, Hashem Shekhov from Avodah Zarah. It's precisely because of the fact, you know, that she rejected idolatry. Okay? Just as we said before, a Yehudi, why is he called Yehudi? Shekhov from Avodah Zarah, and therefore everyone who rejects Avodah Zarah is a Yehudi, a Jew. So she is Yehudiot, because she too rejected idolatry. You see how he's interpreting it, okay? And how do we know that she rejected idolatry? This is a question.
That's right.
So he talks, he quotes a pasuk in Shemos. It's written to Siv, Bateret Baspara Lichos Al Hayor, right? Very famous passage, you know, that Pharaoh's daughter went down in order to bathe in the river, you know, in the Nile River, okay? Yeah, we're on Yud Gimel on the top. Okay. So, Va'omer Rabbi Yochanan. So Rabbi Yochanan said, why did she go to bathe? So he says, She yordo lirchotz migudulei beis oviyo. Okay. She went down in order to bathe, in order to wash away the idolatry of her father's home. Okay. She wanted to sort of, in other words, like you go to a mikveh in order to immerse yourself and to cleanse yourself from whatever has gone before. So likewise, she went into the river in order to cleanse herself from all the idolatry which she had witnessed or maybe participated in, you know,
but
in her father's
say,
home.
Doesn't it say that she actually went down to bathe, as she normally does every day?
It doesn't say every day.
Oh, I mean, as usual.
All that it says is that she went down in order to bathe in the river. That's all that it says. Okay? And so that's what she saw Moshe Rabbeinu, you know. The little baby in the basket, right? The little baby in the...
He's kind of stretching a little bit there.
You know, I said last week that when we come to a drash is a drash. A text is a...
text.
Pretext. I quoted my teacher, my church, my brother.
Actually, his grandson was mentioned.
The grandson, yeah.
Just on the radio, I heard his name.
Yeah. He had a son who became a rabbi in Trent, in Elizabeth, right? Mm-hmm. And this is the father. How do I know? I don't know the grandson, but I heard him speaking. You know, they quoted him, and his voice is identical to the voice of his father. This is very strange. When listening to him, I could hear his father. His name is Michael Chertoff. He's a big man in Washington now. Okay.
Chertoff,
right. Yeah, Chertoff. Right. Yeah. So his father, huh?
You related to him?
Who?
Oh, he's a teacher.
No.
The original Chertoff was one of my teachers.
Oh,
okay,
right.
In fact, he was the first teacher I actually had to learn Gemara.
Oh,
okay.
Did a good job.
Yeah, well, sure. But that was only the beginning. You sort of have to build upon it. Okay.
All right.
So, the next word in the sentence that they want to explain is the word Asher Yolda, right? She gave birth. So, Pharaoh's daughter gave birth. Baharibir Rebise. All right. All that she did was what? She raised Moshe Rabbeinu, but she didn't actually give birth to him, right? Physically?
Symbolically.
Yeah. So, therefore, this teaches us something. What is it? No malacho, in order to teach you, therefore, to call Hamagadi El Yosef Yisaymo. Whoever raises an orphan, a male orphan or a female orphan, right, the Yosef or Yisayma, in his own home, then it's as if he had actually given birth. He gets all the merit as if he had actually given birth to that. Right. Next. Then it says Yered, right? Avi Yered. So the question is, since the father of Yered, so he says Yered, who's Yered? says Yared is Moshe. Yared is Moshe. So the question is, well, Lama Nikra Shmo Yared, if that's the case, so why is he called here in the Pasuk Yared? So the answer is, She Yorad Lahem Yisrael Non Biyama. The reason being that manna fell for the people of Israel in the days of Moshe Rabbeinu. Yorad. In other words, they relate the word Yared to Yorad. Okay? Yorad literally means went down, descended. All right. So in other words, the man descended
came
to them.
Down.
Came down. Down for the people of Israel. Right.
Like Yared Zimu is the derivative, right? The same word. Yared Zimu, like Israel is.
You're thinking of Yordim.
Yordim,
right, correct. The Yordim are the people who are just the opposite of Olim.
Yes.
The Olim go to Eretz Israel, and the Yordim, they leave Eretz Israel. But literally means that they go down from Israel. Of course, when you go in Eretz Israel, you're going higher.
Right.
Okay?
Holy.
Yeah. Alright. Now, the next name that we have over there is Gedor. Actually, today, Avigdor is a very common Jewish name. Very present. Okay, Avigdor. Right. But originally it was Avi Gedor. In other words, the father of Gedor.
Gedor, right.
So, what about why is Moshe Rabbeinu called Gedor? So, the answer is Shagoda Pitsesehen Shal Yisrael. Okay? What did Moshe Rabbeinu do? Wherever there were literally breaks in what the people of Israel, in other words, where the people of Israel had sinned and they were exposed to punishment, it was Moshe Rabbeinu who contained the damage, right, and prayed on behalf of the people of Israel. Of course, the story of the golden calf is the outstanding example where Moshe Rabbeinu said to the Rebbeinu Shalom, wipe me out from your book. If you don't forgive the people, you know, for their sin.
So Gedor means fence?
Gedor, yes. It's related to the word Gadir, which means a fence. Okay?
Yeah.
And therefore, what did he do? He fenced in the breaks. In other words, he made sure that, the people of Israel were protected after they had committed the various sins.
Yeah.
Chever. Why was he called Chever? So the answer is, Shechiber is Israel, Avinu Shemaim. Because he joined, literally, that's what Chiber means over here. He joined the people of Israel to their Father in Heaven. In other words, he was like the person through whose teaching he made the Jews and the Rebbeinu Shel Olam. Right here. Got to call him Shatran. Fine. Okay. Then, the next name that they had over there is Sochel. All right? So, what kind of a name is Sochel for Moshe? Well, is it, what quality is it?
Sochel Moshe.
Yeah, we're talking about Moshe in this passage, okay? At least in the Drush, right?
Yeah.
So he says, Shanasa Lahem Yisrael Kesuka. The answer is that it was called Sochel because he served as a sukkah, in other words, as a shelter, right, to the people of Israel. Okay? A sukkah, after all, the word originally is from the word Sochach, which means covering, okay? But the idea is also to cast a shelter over somebody. And then that's the way the verb is very often used in the Torah or the Bible, right? Used in that sense. Okay. Yekusiel, another fine name. So Shakivu Yisrael El the above. He takes a Yeku, you see that the Kuv Vav? Right?
Above, yeah.
So he relates it to the verb Kavos. The
hope.
Like we say, Kavel Hashem, right? Kavel Hashem. So, in other words, it represents the hope that we have. Shekusiel, Shekivu Yisrael El Bielbon. Because the people of Israel, Kivu, right? You notice Eel, right? That's like Yisrael. And Yekus is from the word that they had hope. The people of Israel had hope in God. Or they trusted in God in the days of Moshe Rabbeinu. Then it says, Avizo Noach. Now, what is a Noach? In modern Hebrew, if I would use the word, who is Niach, it means that he neglected something. Okay? But here, he's using it in a somewhat different sense. What he wants to say is, She his Niach of Nisechem Shol Yisrael. Okay? In other words, he caused the sins of Israel to be literally forgotten by the Rebbeinu Shalom. In other words, he begged the people, he begged the Rebbeinu Shalom for forgiveness, and as a result, it's as if the people of Israel, you know, were forgiven the sins that they had committed. Okay?
Shema Asher Zanim Acharechem has the same root?
No, it's not, because the word Zoner means literally to turn aside, and from this also it means, you know, to be adulterous and so on and so forth. And therefore, of course, what is a Zoner? The prostitute.
Oh, the prostitute.
Yeah, okay. I mean, the fact that it has a Zion and a Nun doesn't automatically mean it's from the same root. This is from Zion, Nun, Ches, right? And then I can show you another nice word that also has a Zion and a Nun, and that's the word Hazana Soilam Kulimatumai, right? In other words, what does Rabbeinu Shalom do? He feeds the world, right? He sustains the world, and so on. So that therefore, just because it has a Zion and a Nun, don't assume automatically that they are the same word. Okay. Avi, what's Avi? So he says, says Avi, and it says Avi, and again it says Avi. Take a look at the Pasuk once more. Okay, what does the Pasuk say? Pasuk said that, okay, that, you know, she gave birth to Yered, who is Avi Gedor, right? Yes, have Avi Socho, yes, if you say Avi Zanoah. So how many times do we have the word Avi mentioned over here? Have it three times. So this is what he's asking. Why does it say Avi, Avi, Avi? So the answer is because Moshe Rabbeinu was first of all an Av the Torah. In other words, he was like a father in Torah. He was Av the Chochmah, right? He was a father when it came to wisdom. Because when you say father, it means over here, you know, like... one of the primary examples, if you wish, right, of Torah, of wisdom, and Av Nevius, right? After all, we call him the Avi HaNeviyim. In other words, he is the father of all, right? He's the foremost of the prophets, okay? And then the post continued, the Yehle B'nei Bisya, and these are the children, Bisya, right, Asher L'kach Merit, right, who Merit took as his wife. So they say, the Merit Shemo? Was the name of her husband Merit? Alo Kolev Shemo. On the contrary, it was Kolev and Yefudah who married Pharaoh's daughter. Well, according to tradition. Okay.
Right. Kolev married Miriam.
Right.
Huh?
No, Miriam was not married to Kolev. Who is Miriam married to again? Let's see, wasn't she married to Roma Kohain or something? I forget what the exact business
is. Was it caught up in Yifune and caught up in something else?
No, no, okay. All right.
Joshua Ben-Nun gave somebody
anyway.
To color, right?
Huh?
Joshua Ben-Nun gave somebody to color.
He gave territory to him. He gave him.
Okay.
Yeah, right. He gave him Hebron, right. Right. All right.
We could give back.
Right. What am I going to say? It's terrible. Because, you know, to be a Jew living in Hebron requires gut, and at the same time, you have to be prepared for all kinds of sorrows over there.
That's
for sure. Yeah. Omar HaKadosh Baruch Hu. All right, so, hello, Kodesh Baruch. So, Omar HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So, HaKadosh Baruch Hu said, Yovo Kolev. Shemorat Batsas Miraglim, right? The reason why he's called Merit, right, is because Kolev is the one who rebelled against the report of the Miraglim, the spies. Remember, they came back with a report that it's impossible to conquer the land, and it was Kolev Ben Yefuna who got up to speak, and they thought he was going to rally their cause. Right? But then they continue, but he says, but if God wants us to do it, we can do it. Right.
He married Pharaoh's daughter.
Huh? So in other words, according to this tradition, Kolev married Bitya Bas Paro. Right. According to this tradition. Don't like this tradition, but maybe it was all fun.
We got to accept this.
Right. Then it's written, by Yisra is Bas Paro, right? And not only the fact that Kolev himself was a rebel against what? Against the idea, you know, against the plan that the Barak lived, the spies. But he married also Bas Paro, right, the daughter of Pharaoh, Shemar Domigulule Besoviha, right, who rebelled against the idolatry that was in her father's home. Okay. Then, we are now, by the way, expounding the various psukim in the second chapter of the Megillah. Okay? And, you know, we started, first of all, you know, with Ahasuerus, then, of course, now we expounded upon the Pasuk, Ishu Hudi Hoya, Vishusha Navira, and so on and so forth, as for Mordechai, Benyum, Akish, Yishimini, right? And then the next Pasuk says, Asher Hoglo, Mirushalayim, who was exiled from Jerusalem, right? And of course, when was it? This was the Imhagurla Asher Hoglaso, Imichanyo, Ben Yehudi. In other words, together with the, you know, the exiles in the days of King Yehoyachin, or King Yehoyah. Okay? Right. That was the first one, as I said, that was in 597, when a considerable number of Jews, particularly among the better classes, the better educated, the better artisans, and so on and so forth, they were taken as captives to Babylonia. Okay? So, the question is about Mordechai. Okay? And this is what it says. It says, Asher Hoglo Yerushalayim, if we take it actually literally, according to the grammar, it means that he was forced into exile from Jerusalem, right? This is the pshat. Because if we understand Hebrew grammar, we know that we have what we call in Hebrew a hifil, which means that you cause a certain action to take place, and the passive of it is the hofal. Okay? So, in this particular case, the pshat would be simply that he was caused by whom? By the Babylonians, in other words, be in exile from Yerushalayim. But that's pshat. But Omar Rava, Rava said, no, it wasn't that he was forced to go into it. Ella, what as we say, Shegola Miatzmo, which means that he voluntarily went into exile. So, of course, the question is, why did he voluntarily go into exile? It's a Gleisach Lik. So, of course, Rashi says over there that the reason being, we can take a look at the Rashi. You see, Shekola Mi'atzmo. This is roughly about 7-8 lines in the Rashi. It says, Shekola Mi'atzmo, it says, Midolo Ksiv, inasmuch as it is not written, Asher Hoyo Min Hagolo. Asher Hoglaso, right? That he was not one of the people who went into exile, right? Which was forced into exile. You see, the Asher Hoyo Min Hagolo is reminiscent more of the beginning of the book of Yechezkel. Because Yechezkel was among those who were exiled to Babylonia. But what's the point that he's making over here is, Siv Asher Hoglo Im Hagolo. He went into exile together with the Gola. So Mashma Shelo Hayok Yisheor Yisrael Shegolo Al Korchan. In other words, this is to teach us, says Rashi, that he was not like the other Jews who were exiled unwillingly. Al Korchan means, you know, without their consent, unwillingly. The Hu Golo Miatzmo. But on the contrary, he went into exile on his own accord, voluntarily. Just as Jeremiah did the same thing, who also went into exile in order to sympathize with those who were leaving Yerushalayim. This was already after the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash, okay? But until the Rebbeinu Shlomo told him to go back. So in other words, there had to be a reason, and the question is, what is the reason? It's not mentioned over here. Why did he? But the answer is he wanted to give encouragement to the Jewish community. And that's the reason why he went into exile voluntarily. Okay? Then, the pasuk continues about Mordechai. Okay? Next pasuk says, "Vayehi Obedes Hadassah." He was the one who brought up Hadassah. So, and then what does it say in the same pasuk? He Esther, right? She is Esther Bas Dodo, right? The daughter of his uncle. In other words, she was the niece, right? Bas Dodo. She was the daughter of his uncle, which would make no, no. Daughter of an uncle, the cousin. All right. So she was his cousin. Okay, correct. We always think of Esther being the niece, you know, of Mordecai, but it's really not what the pasuk says. The pasuk says that she was a cousin to Mordecai. Okay. But at any rate, he was the one who raised her, and then the pasuk says, Ki ein lo av va'eim, because she did not have a father or a mother. Okay? All right. So now we're going to explain, you know, what each of these words are talking about. Okay, so first of all, Vayehi Ominis Hadassah, right? So pasuk says Kori Lo Hadassah. She's called in the pasuk Hadassah, the Kori Lo Esther. In the same time, she's also called Esther. Same person, right? So the question is, why did she have two names? Why was she called Hadassah and also Esther? So Tanya. One teaching is Rabbi Meir Omer. Rabbi Meir says Esther Shmo, right? Her real name was Esther. The Lamanikra Shmo Hadassah. So the question is, why does the pasuk also call her Hadassah? It says Al Shem Hatzadikim Shenikru Hadassim. This is because the righteous people are called in the Bible Hadassim. They're called Myrtles, right? Which is the literal meaning of it. Bechenu Omer, and likewise, we have a pasuk. This happens to be a pasuk in Zechariah, which says that the Ruah made ben Hadassim. That he, they're actually talking about like a, he saw a man who afterwards he realized was an angel. Okay, Zechariah. But anyway, he was standing over there among the Hadassim, among the myrtles. Okay. So that's his opinion. Because of her righteousness, in other words, because she was a tzaddikus, as we would say, right? This is why she was called Hadassah. But her real name was Esther. Okay? That's opinion number one. Okay? And that was Rabbi Meir's opinion. Rabbi Yehuda, he came along and gave a different interpretation. Yehuda Omer says Hadassah Shmua. Her name was really Hadassah, right? Belom on Nikre Shemo Esther. So why was her name called Esther? So he says, Hashem Shaho Yisah Masteres Divoreha. The reason being that the word Esther suggests the word Lahastir, which means to conceal. In other words, she would conceal literally her words, but it means she concealed the fact that what? That she was Jewish. Okay? Shenemar, as the pasuk says in the Megillah, Ein Esther, my Geddes is obvious, Monadator, right? That Esther did not reveal who her people were or where she was born and so on and so forth. Then, of course, it also says over there, you know, that she did exactly as what? As Mordechai had told her, right? But this is, she should not.
It's interesting that the Kashkarish wouldn't inquire.
Yeah, I agree with you. But obviously, we have to say that he was so struck by her that, you know, he didn't ask any more questions, right? Achashverosh. But we'll have a physical description of Esther in a few minutes. Well,
really?
Sort of, not completely.
Just, a model in today's world?
I don't know. When we get there, we'll see.
Right.
Okay. Rabbi Nechemiah says, Hadassah Shema. He again, he says, yeah, her name is really Hadassah. The Loma Nikra is Esther. So why was she called Esther? He says, Shehoyu Ulos Oilen Kurinosa Ashum Istar. Okay? They called her Esther because she was called that because she was as beautiful as Istar. Now the question is only what is Istar? There are two different opinions.
Okay?
One, Istar means that she was as beautiful as, remember we had the word Sahara that I spoke about, I think last week it was, or 2 weeks ago, and I said that this is another name given for the moon. So that in other words, she may have been as beautiful as when the moon shines, you know, in all its glory, right?
Right.
Yeah, Shemin de Lavona, exactly. Okay. But another interpretation of this Tahar is that this is really the name of the star Venus, another name for it, okay? Which again, you know, in the darkness of the night, it shines beautifully, so she's the beautiful one. Now, that finds a support, which is not mentioned over here, but we had a reference to it almost at the beginning of the Gilead, where they take the 22nd star, okay? And over there it says, you know, Letzeach al Ayeles HaShachar, right? That this is one of the Psalms concerning the Ayeles HaShachar, which we translate as the morning star, okay? And who do they refer it to? They refer it to Esther, what we had, okay? When we came across that passage, which they explained, and they said that this is a reference to Esther, because what is the verse that follows? It follows with the words, Eli, Eli, lama sabachthani, right? My God, why have you forsaken me? And, you know, salvation is so far from me. But the Ator Kodosh, Yoshev Elas Israel, but you are the Holy One who dwells among the praises of the people of Israel, and Israel has always trusted in you, etc., etc. And so the Rebbeinu Shleilam, you know, sent Yeshua on her behalf, as well as on behalf of Mordechai. Okay? Alright. So, these are some of the interpretations as to whether she was Hadassah or whether she was Esther. And if she was Hadassah, then why was she called Esther and so on? Okay. Benazai Omer, this was said in the physical description, but it's it's not a very... is what we would call a nondescript description. Benhazai says, Esther, lo aruka, velo ketzara ha'isa, ela benonis, kahadasa. He says that Esther was neither tall, aruka over here means tall, nor was she short, right, but rather she was of average height, and he says she was of average height just like a hadasa, just like a myrtle, right. If we think about the Arba Minim, you know, that we use on Sukkot, right? So we know that the Arovos, the willows, usually are a taller plant than the Hadassim, than the Brethren. Of course, that's the case, you know, you have to shorten it or something, or you have to pull it further down, because the Hadassim is supposed to be just a little bit higher than the Arovos at the time when we gathered them together with the Lord, okay. But the idea being, you know, that she was not as tall as either the Lulav, right, or as the Arovos, right, okay. Yeah.
Why is there a particular order when you combine?
Why?
Yeah.
All right, you ask a good question. Pre Eitz Hodor, Kapos de Morim, Anaf Eitz Avos, and then the Ari Noch. Okay, in other words, the Pasuk says, you know, Pre Eitz Hodor, that's of course the Eswag, Kapos de Morim, you know, palm branches, so that's your Lulav, right? Anaf Eitz Avos, and also a branch of the, literally, the plant which has thick little leaves, right? So that's the Hadassim, and then the Arve Nochel, and then the willows growing on water, okay? So we go in that order, okay? And of course, you know that what we have to have is three Hadassim and two Arovos that we join together. In other words, we're sort of giving precedence to the Hadassim in this particular case. Mystical meaning, or you know, the other implications about the Arba Aminim, there's so many different stories to, you know, so one compares, you know, the lobes to the spine, and the Hadassim, you know, another thing is compared to the mouth, and, you know, etc., etc. Okay. Or tzaddikim, rishoyim, people in the middle, etc., etc. Okay. Right. Yeah. All right. So, at any rate, here we have a description that in reality she was neither tall nor short, right, but rather she was beinonis. She was of the average height, just as the Hadassim are. Okay. Then he continues on. Ben Korcho Omar, he says, Esther Yirak Rokes Hoyasa, the Chut Shal Chesed Moshuch Oleha. Okay? Which means, literally, Esther was greenish. Now, if I would take this literally, that she was greenish, we don't think that anybody who has a greenish complexion necessarily has has a healthy appearance, right?
Right.
So that, therefore, we have to say that the word meant a little bit different to him. That to him, Yirak Rokes meant, actually, sort of like fair complexion. Okay?
Like a fresh plant.
Yeah, okay, good.
That's
right.
Exactly.
Right, she had a blossoming personality.
Yeah.
Okay, very good.
I don't mean fresh.
Yeah.
Like
okay. A thread of kindliness, of gentility, was spread all over. In other words, she, you can see that she was a very gentle and kind and loving person. Okay. Yeah.
Is there any lead as to how old she was when she presented?
No. No. But she was a virgin, so...
Oh,
okay.
So.
At least we hope so, right? Okay, all right. Then, if we remember that the same pasuk mentioned from the fact that the ain lo over aim, right? She did not have a father or a mother. The most of Ichavimo, and upon the death of her father and her mother. So the question is, already it says that she doesn't have, right, she didn't have a father or a mother. So why did it have to repeat again what and when her father and her mother died? So lovely, why do we have to have that repetition over there? So Rav Acha said, the reason being that the following happened. Ibarta, at the time when her mother conceived her, Mesaviha, right, her father died. Yiladata, then when her mother gave birth to her, Mesa Ima, her mother died. So that's the reason why it says, the most of Yehovi Ima. Alright? Then the next part of the same pasuk says, the Kocho Mordechai Lo Levas, that Mordechai took her unto himself as a daughter. Right? So Tana, this gives us a very strange interpretation, I have to say, but a lot of people, you know, take it literally. Tana, we have a teaching, Mishum Rabbi Meir, who said it in the name of Rabbi Meir, it says, Al Tikra Nevas, right, to not say that she was taken as a daughter, but Ella Levias, which means, in other words, that she was taken as a wife to Mordechai.
Really?
That's why I say, I mean, that this is a very difficult concept, because obviously then it means...
The base means a house, doesn't it?
No,
bias means a house, correct. But if you remember, beginning of the Mishnah, Yumov, it says, V'chiper ba'do uva'ad beiso. In other words, the high priest on Yom Kippur is to do what? He's to make atonement for himself and for his household. And at that particular point, the Mishnah says, beiso zu ishto. In other words, who is his home, who is his household? The answer is his wife. She is the one who makes the household. Understand?
So,
yes.
There is an explanation for this.
Fine.
Okay. I was reading in the Jerusalem Post, I'm getting to this my usual one, but it's like, a very interesting article about a group of Jews in northern Iran who they actually became like the Muslim equivalent of Iran. They had a very intolerant Muslim ruler. They made all the Jews in the city convert. Okay. And then afterwards, they had a more tolerant ruler and were able to go back to Judaism. But they were still very afraid. And so early into the 20th century, as happened in many other places in the world, as soon as the Jewish girls got to be 8 or 9 or 10 years old,
yeah,
they were married. minute ceremony, all right? They were married, so none of the Muslim men could come and marry them.
Right.
Okay. Now, by analogy, maybe the same thing here. Maybe Mordecai was afraid. Here's a girl, after all, it's worth it. Practically no worth in this kind of world. And to protect her, he married her. In name only.
And they couldn't be in the same house together without being married.
They're
really supposed to
be. All right. Sure, wait. I just want to say that what David touched upon reminded me of a Tosfos that we had in Kedushin many, many years ago when we learned that time. At that time we saw that the Tosfos is concerned about the fact that a girl should not be married against her will.
Right.
Okay?
Right.
But he said at this particular time when we're living in an age when the Jews are being persecuted and we don't know whether we'll be alive or dead because of all the crusades and the persecution, so therefore under those circumstances, it's permissible for young boys and young girls to be betrothed to one another.
Even against their own will.
Yeah. Not necessarily even against their own will. I mean, but the point is, normally a girl should be an adult, before.
Before she's betrothed.
Yeah.
I see them doing the same thing right now, right?
Yeah, many of them do. Right.
Right after the Crusades.
Yeah. So, at any rate, I mean, we see, that, there are possibilities. As I say, it's very, very difficult, how to interpret.
That's exactly
right. Okay. All right. At any rate, to continue. The Chen Hu Omer, and he gives another example. This is an example taken from the life of King David. If you remember what happened, King David fell in love with Bathsheba, right? He saw her, and being a king, he had his way with her, okay? She had a husband, if you remember. Right.
He sent her off.
He sent him off to be killed, and so on. So, along came Nathan Hanavi, right? Prophet Nathan, in order to scold David for what he had done. But he didn't put it to say, he didn't say, you are a blank. But instead he told him a story. He said, with a rush, right, he told him a story about a poor man who had an only sheep, right. And, and he tells him, with a rush ain't coal. He says, this poor man had nothing, kiim kipsa achatz ketat, except for one young sheep, Asher Kodo, which he had bought, Vayechayeho, and he fed it, Vatigdalimo, and she grew up together with him, Yimonov, and with his children, Yachta, together. Right? Nipito Tochel, right? From his own bread, she would also eat, Mikoso Tishta, and from his cup, she would drink, Uvecheko Tishkov, and in his bosom she would lie, Vatahilo Kivas, and she was like a daughter unto him. In other words, to show what? To show how he loved this, this poor little sheep, and he cherished it as if she were his own daughter. Right. So that under those circumstances, we can see then that what? That where it's written, about Mordechai taking Esther and, Kivas, so it shows that, that how close in feeling, he was to her. Okay. So, now the commentary about, again, Kivas is similar to what we had over here. It says, Mishum de Vecheko Tishkav, Havaslei Kivas, Ela Levias. In other words, the fact that this little sheep, would lie in his bosom, So that's why she became like a daughter to him, right? But rather it was, you know, kivayist, as if they were almost as intimate as if, you know, she were his wife. Doesn't want to say, you know, that he's guilty of bestiality, chas v'shalom. But, you know, okay. But, you know, that they were very, very close, okay?
They get close to a dog, they get close to a
sheep. The Hokinomi, so over here too, with this case of Esther, it's the same idea. Okay, this is what he said. Okay?
Good enough.
Yeah, this is what the Tana said in the name of Rabbi Meir. Alright, then it's written, you know, that she came into the Harib, right, the Beis Hadoshim, literally the house of the women, mm-hmm. and there was a very nice guy by the name of Haggai, or Hager, right, who was in charge of the women over there, right, and we say, and it's written over there, that not only did he give her all kinds of cosmetics and everything else and so, but he also gave her the Yeshiva HaNa'aros, right, he gave her seven maidens, you know, who would take care of her, they would serve her, take care of her, they would help her cosmetically, etc., etc. All right. So the question is, why seven maidens, right? So Omar Rava said, the reason being, Shehoyesah Mono Behen Yimei Shabbos. Because each one had a different name. In other words, the implication sort of is, this one was called Rishon or Rishona, this one was called Shniyah, this one was called Shlishiyah, something like that, all right? And therefore she was able to figure out that she didn't have a calendar in front of her, so she was able to figure out when it was Shabbos. Okay. Then it's written by Yishaneh V'yeslar Otseho, and you know, this man Hager, you know, he gave her changes and her maidens and so on and so forth, all right. And so Omar Rav, so the point is, you know, he was a very nice guy, and he took care of her very, very carefully. So Omar Rav, so Rav says it means Sheher Kilo Machal Yehudi, that he gave her Jewish food to make. Obviously, it has to be kosher food, right? Okay, because we can't imagine that she'll go kosher style, but instead she had kosher food to eat. Okay, Shmuel Omar, and Shmuel said, well, yeah, he gave her kosher food, but you know what he gave her? Sheher Kilo Kotle the Chazirin. Which
very hot.
May mean you can tell
hog bacon. That's what it says there.
Yeah. That's one possibility. Okay. However, we have to take a look. Okay. This is one one interpretation. But number one, if he gave her bacon, obviously she wouldn't eat it because, you know, she wanted to eat only kosher food, right? Okay. So that's why, if you take a look, there's a marginal note on the left. You see that? It says Perish?
Yeah.
Very small little letters over there.
Where is this?
Do you see the word Perish? I don't know if you have it in your text. Over it should be there.
Yeah.
But the text over here, it says Perish. Another meaning, it says the meaning of Kotlei B'Chazir is not that he, you know, that she had sides of the bacon. But rather, it says, Orev shel chazeret, kolomer rosh shel chatzot. In other words, he gave her lettuce, he says. In other words, he gave her salads to eat so that they were good for her. Okay.
Yeah. What does Rashi say? I can't say.
Rashi says that she ate the pork.
I know this, and I'm looking at Rashi.
Okay, I'll tell you what Rashi says.
That's fine.
Take a look. Kodle de Chazira, you know what he says? He says, bakunis, in other words, bacon. Shemenis, fat bacon. Okay? Umetech onso lodensha. But because she was forced to eat this stuff,
right,
had nothing else to eat, and he forced her to eat, so therefore she was not punished for it. Alright, so take your pick. It's either Rashi's interpretation, or it's the parish that we have on the side. Okay? All right. So at any rate, pardon me?
They also refer to an explanation by Tosfos.
Yeah, all right. Well, Tosfos says, okay.
Yeah, that's
for you.
Yeah.
First of Megillah.
Take a look. No, let's see over there. Kodli the Chazir. You see the very small placements over there.
Yeah.
Says, V'chatz v'sholom. God forbid that we should say that she ate it the way Rashi says. No, she didn't eat it. Okay.
So, take your pick.
Take your pick, right.
So why do we not
hit
on Purim? I thought because she was eating a lot of beans and stuff like that.
We're coming to that too. Remember, we have all kinds of opinions over here. Okay. All right. So far, one interpretation is that he gave a Jewish food. The next one, the Shmuel says, that he gave a chazer, right?
Yeah.
Rabbi Yochanan Omar, Rabbi Yochanan says, Zeronim. What is Zeronim? Zeronim means literally seeds, but this is what we would call legumes.
Legumes,
right.
Like beans.
Peas, rice, etc.
Yeah.
And what is the... the precedent for that, it says, V'cheinu Omer, and this is like, where it says in the book of Daniel, you remember when Daniel was among those who were selected by Nebuchadnezzar to be raised in the court of Babylon, right? So it's written over there, V'yehi ha-melzar, noseyes pas bagam, v'noseyn lehem zeronim. In other words, the Meltzer was the person who was in charge of feeding them. Today in modern Hebrew, Meltzer means the waiter. But there it meant the person, the official in charge, let's say the head chef or something like that.
They use that today? Meltzer?
Oh yeah, Meltzer in Hebrew means, right. Meltzer is a waiter and Meltzerit is...
It's a female waiter.
Yeah, right, the waitress, right. So... the Meltzer, as we said, the person who was in charge of feeding them, he would carry into them pas bagam, in other words, the bread that they were to eat, and he gave them zeronim, all right? And he gave them, we translate in English as pulse or legumes or something like that. So there is the origin of that. Literally, it means seeds, zeronim, but we interpret it as he gave them things like peas and beans, what we call legumes, but in the old English translation they use the word pulse, P-O-L-S-E, which does not mean this, but it means the other thing. I mean, it could mean both of them, right? But when they say pulse, that's what they mean. Okay. Trouble is with King James, the translation that you read it, and the original JPS also followed, that the English language has changed quite a bit since those days. I mean, after all, we're talking about four centuries ago. So words do change in meaning. So if you see the word in the Bible over there, in the English translation, it says pulse. So the question is, so what's pulse? But this is the answer. Modern Hebrew, of course, zeronim, are seeds.
Like?
Yeah. Ordinary seeds.
Like, just seeds that you plant, or
seeds? The seeds that you plant, right.
Oh, really?
Yeah. To me, zeronim is the original of what Hebrew today is called garinim. Garin also means a seed. But if you speak about garinim in Israel, it means like pumpkin seeds, taking
the
milk.
They go crazy with that,
Right.
Huh?
They do. They love the Jew upon them.
Listen,
I remember my father over the show. He used to bring home bags of Indian nuts.
Right.
He used to bring home poly seeds.
Yeah. Right. Pumpkin seeds.
Right. Right.
We didn't know from pistachio nuts.
No. They were the poor man's pleasure. Okay.
Peanuts, yours.
Right. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, pumpkin seeds, of course. Right.
Yeah.
And you can salt them and they have even more taste. Right. I used to love them.
You take them out of the pumpkin and dry them up and you can use them.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
Then it's written, Shisha Chodosha Meshevin Hamor, right? It describes the cosmetic treatment that she underwent. Well, for 6 months they gave her the oil of myrrh.
Myrrh.
Myrrh. Okay. Why Shemin Amor? What is Shemin Amor? Right.
Frankincense and myrrh.
Yeah. So Rav Chiya bar Abba Obar, that's stacked. That's the Greek word, stacked, which means myrrh in Greek, okay? So naturally, you know, remember that in Eretz Yisrael, Greek was one of the common languages. Aramaic was a common language, Greek was another common language. So therefore, they're using a Greek term in order to describe what it is. In the Greek, it's stacte, okay?
Stacte.
Right, okay.
This was used in the Art School of Sidur with the Keturis.
Right, exactly. You're right. That's how he translates it. Yeah, so it's based upon this interpretation. Okay. Rafun Omar, he says, no, it wasn't myrrh, he says it was Shemen Zayas. Right? It was olive oil, but what kind of olive oil? Shaloh Havishnish, which had not yet attained one third of its growth. In other words, it was unripe olives that had been crushed and made into oil. Okay? Tanya Rabbi Yehud Oimer, he says, Antakinum, Shemen Zayah Shaloh Havishnish. He says it was a pekin. Again, he's using a Greek word, which means more or less the same thing. In other words, that it was not fully mature. Okay. In Greek, at the beginning of nouns, very often is what we call the alpha negative, which means not something like that. Like for example, or it could be an. You know, an. Remember last week I was telling you about the Greek word for a name, right? And what is anonymous? Means without
name,
and so on, you see. Okay. Anhydrate?
Without water.
Without water, exactly. Right. Yeah. Right, right. So, so it's not, in other words, it's not according to the canon. In other words, it's not according to the way it should be yet. In other words, it's unripe. Okay? And he says it's the same thing in Shemin Zayah Shaloh Havishnish. All right. So the question is, well, Lama Sachin Oso? So why did they use this kind of oil upon Esther or upon the other women? Because this was typical of what they did for the first 6 months when the women were in the harem, right? She says, Shemashir es haseyor, v'ma'adir es habosar. This type of Shemin Zayas, which comes, you know, from an unripe plant, unripe olives, he says, it does two things. First of all, it's a depilatory. Mashir es haseyor, it causes the hair to fall out. So I guess it means, you know, women use razors today in order to appear cosmetically more attractive, right? So the oil did the same thing. It was a depilatory. But also at the same time, he says, Ma'adin sabosa, it makes the flesh feel good. Okay? Then it's written in the description of, you know, the women being invited to the king's palace, right? It says, Bo'erev hi bo'or uvapoke hi shabbat. In the evening, she would come into the king's quarters, right? And in the morning, she would return back again to where? To the harem, right? To the Beis Hadashim. Yeah. So Amar Rabbi Yochanan, Rabbi Yochanan says, Migenuso shalosa rosha mamadu shivcha, says, from the fact that, you know, we have a description of him as being a not nice character, I'm being very polite to my, he's being a paskutzva person, right?
Paskutnyak.
But nevertheless, we learn also something praiseworthy about him, okay? Never give up completely on the person, right? And what is the praiseworthiness? That he never had relations, he never had intercourse during the day. He would serve it only in the evening. Right. Okay. So at least, you know, that's a sign of a bishan of tzniyus, okay?
Tzniyus?
Yeah. A little modesty.
Oh. We didn't have any lights on in the room.
That doesn't say so, but maybe. Maybe.
You take it for granted.
Right. Vatahi Esther Noses Chay. And then it's written, you know, and Esther found favor, right? So Abba Rabbi Elazar said, Milabed, Shelachol Echod Echod Dimis Aloki Mozart. Says, you know, it's written, Noses Chay, Biyane Kolo Echod, that she found favor in the eyes of anyone, everyone who beheld her. So, how can everybody be happy? You know, everyone, feels so favorably towards her. So, one of the explanations is Rabbi Elazar. It says that it teaches us that to everyone, Nidmas Alokyu Moser, it seemed that she was a native of his particular country. And we had that in the description also before.
Yeah, the universal remember, law.
Right,
yeah.
If you remember, they had an argument as to who is the most beautiful, which women are the most beautiful, right? Someone said that the Medes, another one said the Persians, right?
Right.
Finally, Ahasuerus says, my wife is a Babylonian, she's a Chaldean,
yeah.
Right? She's a Chaldean, and she's the most beautiful. So therefore it proves that the Chaldean women are the prettiest, okay. So, at any rate, Esther too, that everybody thought that she was a native of his country. Because why? She never revealed who she was. Remember, she never revealed her true identity.
As a
Jewess. Right, that she was Jewish, right. So everyone felt, she was whoever he was, of the same nationality. Then it's written about Tilokach Esther Amel Achashverosh Amel Zmachusol Achodesh Vaseri Hu Chodesh Teves. Okay, Esther was taken into King Achashverosh, into his royal palace, in the 10th month, which is the month of Teves, right? Current month. Okay, so it says Yerach Shenen Guf Min Haguf. You know, it's so cold at this time of the year that one body likes to rub up next to another body.
Keep warm,
right, okay. Then, Vayehav HaMelech es Esther mikol hanoshim, Vatis Achein v'chesed l'fonim mikol ha'psulas. What's peculiar about the pasuk over here is it says that the king loved Esther more than any other woman, right? And she found favor in his eyes more than any virgin. Now, we were told that they had told him what does the council say? But they should gather all the young virgins, Zara Basula, and so on and so forth, right? So, Omar Rav, so Rav said, Bikesh Nitoim Ta Basula Toa, says, if he was in the mood that he wanted to sleep with a virgin, so this is what he enjoyed, okay? Tam Ba'ula, what if he wanted to enjoy the taste of a married woman? Toan.
A non-virgin.
So, right, non-virgin. So that therefore, you know, that's why it says Noshim, and it also says Basulas. In other words, he had relations with both married women and also virgins, right.
But they were married to him, they were married to him.
Yeah, okay, all right, but look.
The harem, after all, isn't he?
The ulos doesn't necessarily mean, incidentally, the Hebrew that, you know, married. It means simply that they're non-virgins.
Yeah. Okay.
No longer virgins. Okay. But usually, I mean, it refers to, you know, a woman who's married.
Well, neither was Esther.
Yeah.
Spent the night with
him. All right. No. Male, of course. All right. Okay. Then, right after that, it's written, after, you know, she came into the household and, you know, she found favor in his eyes, and it's written, Vayas HaMelech Mishteh Godol, that the king made a very great feast, right? Chosor Vadov Eis Mishteh Esther, that's the rest of it, right? For all his princes and important people, he feast in honor of Esther, right? So he says, Ovad Mishtayo, Velo Galilei. Achashverosh made a great big banquet in her honor, but nevertheless, she did not reveal who she was to him. Doli Karga, then what did he do? He gave a break in taxes to the people below Galilee, and still she did not reveal herself to him. Shoda Pashdine below Galilee, and then he sent her all kinds of gifts, and yet she did not reveal herself unto him. Now, Rashi explains what is the connection. says, Ovad Mishtaya, that's the big Rashi that we have over there. So they made a, a party, right? Chosen the Chamin Yonim, the fire sign. In other words, he tried all kinds of different shtick in order to gain her confidence. Shetigalelo Baladato, right? That she should reveal unto him, what her birth was. In other words, the fact, was she Jewish or what? But no, didn't help.
He didn't know where she came from, though.
That's correct. The Somuch law, and next to it we have the High Law, right? And it follows where it says, Kaveis Bisulo Shenis, right? And then, that the virgins again were gathered together. And then it's written in Esther Margeris Maladatov, yes, Hamlet. And Esther did not reveal, who she was. So, Ovad Mishtaya, Seudo Lichodo, right? So we made a part in order to honor her. Marshallah was so Bishra Noshim. We don't find that this happened after any of the other women were taken in. We find only a Mishnah after Esther. So obviously why? Because he also wanted to find out more about her, to honor her, but to find out more about her, who she was. Then Doli Kargo, as we said, in other words, he lifted the tax, in other words, he remitted taxes. All right. Omar, he said, well, Bishvil Esther, Adima Liach Lechem, Mechasai, right? Gelul Lechem. In other words, Mechse Gelul Lechem. It says, for the sake of Esther, I'm going to give you tax relief, okay? Hainu, so then it's written, the same pasuk, Hanocha Lamdino, it's also that, he gave an easing of taxes to the various provinces. And still, she didn't reveal herself to him. Then it says, Shoda Pashtinoi, right? It says, Doronos, the Sorin, right? Bishma. Rashi interprets it as saying that he sent all kinds of gifts to the officials of the various provinces that he had in her name in order to find out what? In order to find out if any of them knew her, and that way. And therefore it's written by Yitain Matseis Ki Atamelech, which means that he gave out gifts even as the royal head, that's in other words, beneficently. Okay? And nevertheless, the Lord God Yadayah, she did not reveal. Okay. And then, of course, it's written in Kaveis Besula Shenis, right? And then when maidens again came together, right? So Ozal Shokal Eitzav and Mordechai. So he didn't know what to do, so what did he do? He went to Mordechai in order to find out, because the Pasuk says in Kaveis Besula Shenis, that when the maidens were gathered the second time, right, Mordechai Yosha Bishar Melech, it's written, right, that Mordechai was dwelling in the king's, in the gate of the king's palace, all right. So, also Shokalites of Mordechai. So he said, I better find out for Mordechai. So Mordechai said, Ein Isham is Kana Ela Be'erach HaBe'etor. Okay. So, he said, no woman is jealous except for another woman. A woman is normally not jealous except that she will be jealous of another woman. So Afilo Hawking, nevertheless, Lo Gadule. Nevertheless, she never revealed herself, Tehsiv, as the Pasuk says, Ein Esther Magenis Monavator. Esther did never tell what her origin was.
Let me go to the other women. Right.
Okay. All right, we shall stop at this particular point at the bottom of the page, and we'll continue next week.
Okay.
All right, so tonight is already the 2nd of January,
right,
in the year 2002, and we are now continuing in the Gemara Megillah, and we have a couple of words left at the bottom of Yud Gimel Aleph, and then we shall continue with Yud Gimel Omid Beis.
Right.
Okay? All right. It says, Omer Rabbi Elazar, Rabbi Elazar said, My Dixir, what is the meaning of the Pasuk that we find, Lo Yigra Mitzadik Einov? Now, this is a verse that we find in the book of Eov, the book of Job, and what it says is literally that he will not withhold his eyes from somebody who is righteous. In other words, Rebbe Shalom was always looking out for the righteous person. Right. So, how does he apply it over here to the Megillah? This is a question, all right? So he says, We're talking about Esther. He says, "Bischar tzniyus shahoyso berachel zochta v'yotzu b'menu Shaul." Or bischar tzniyus shahoyabo b'Shaul zochta v'yotzu b'menu Esther. All right. Remember, what was the genealogy of Esther? She came from the tribe of Binyamin. Okay. Where did Shaul come from? He came from Binyamin. All right. So now they're drawing a parallel between the tznius, in other words, in this particular case, the modesty of Shaul, and also the modesty of Esther. What was the modesty of Shaul? So, well, first of all, he starts, okay, what I forgot to do is to simply start again with the second one. Not that I forgot, but I should have explained, first of all, Yischar tznius shehoyso b'Rachel. It was because of the modesty that Rachel possessed that Shaul was descended from Rachel. After all, Rachel, remember, had two children, right? Yeah, one was Yosef, and the other one was Benjamin. So it was because of her tzniyus, because of her special characteristic of modesty, that she was worthy enough that Shaul, who was the first king of Israel, should be descended. This is the idea. And also, because of the modesty that we had in Shaul, this is the reason why he was worthy enough that an Esther should be a descendant of him. So in other words, I'll tell you what it's based on. To a certain extent, Rashi doesn't really say too much about it over here, but the fact is, you know, that if you remember, that Shaul's father's name was a man by the name of Kish, right? Shaul's father was called Kish.
Kish,
right. And at the same time, what do we find about Esther, Bas Michael, Bas, and so on, right? And so on. So the answer is that she too was descended from the same family, eventually, right? So as a result, he identifies her as being a descendant of Shaul. All right. And now, what was the worthiness of Shaul that he should have an Esther descended from him? So the answer is also because he had tznius. All right. So now that he's made the statement, he has to show the proof of it.
Yeah.
Okay?
Yeah.
All right. So how does he show this, the proof? So he says, first of all, my tznius chayso v'barachel. What is this modesty, the special, you know, characteristic that we find in Rachel? They said, this is it. We find that it's written, what? Vayagin Yaakov to Rachel ki achi avihu hu. That Yaakov told Rachel, this is when, you know, he first met her at the well, right? That he was her brother's, he was her father's brother, achi avihu, right?
The brother of her father.
Yeah, the brother of her father, literally. So the Gemara says, how could he be, you know, her father's brother? After all, he was the son of her father's sister. Okay? Elo, but he said unto her, Amala, he says, Minzaboli, would you marry me? Amala, in. So she said, yes. Mihu, however, she said, Abba Ramahu, my father, you know, is a big cheat.
Deceiver,
right. Ramahu. The law, Yechot Le, not only that, but you'll never be able to beat him at this game, right?
Good so, poker player.
Right. So, Amalah, so he said to her, Achiv Anabba Ramahu. Okay, when it comes to Achi, in other words, I'm like a brother to him when it comes to the ability to deceive, right? Okay. Of course, if you remember, this harks back to what? How he got the bracha from his father, you know, instead of Esav getting it.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay,
but
there was
he
also
got
a little
anyway. But he got through when they palm lay off on him anyway.
Yes, yes. Okay. So, okay. So God's fine. So he convinces Rachel, you know, that he could handle her father's, you know, ability to deceive. All right. So then she asks him the following question. She says, Amalei, she said to him, Ami Sharon and Tzaddik of the Squee of Rabbi Musa, tell me, is it right for a Tzaddik to indulge in a great deal of Rabbaus, you know,
deceitfulness?
Amalei, in. He says, yeah. Why? We have a pasuk, that's the pasuk that we have in Shmuel Beis, and of course it's quite similar to one that we had in Tillim just the other day. It says, Im Novor to Tabor, the Yimikesh to Tabor. That with somebody who is boorish, you can be a boor. And with somebody who is stubborn, you can twist them around too. In other words, it all depends, you know, if that person is no good, then you can handle him with his own weapons, okay? Handle him with, you know, beat him at his own game, so. All right. So Amalah, so he said to her, Mara Yusuf. So he said, okay, how does your father want to deceive me? So Amalah, she said to him, you know, Yisli Achto de Kshisha Minai. Says, I have a sister who is older than I am. The Lord Monsivli the Kaba, and he's not going to marry her off. He's not going to marry me off before her, right? So Mosalot Simonim. So he gave her certain Simonim. You know, literally means signs, but in other words, he gave us certain things whereby he could identify the fact what. That she was really Rachel, okay? Yeah. Because presumably she came veiled, right?
Obviously.
For the wedding, right? Mm-hmm. And, okay. So, all right.
Yeah.
So, Gam's fine. So, he gave her these special hints, you know, whereby he would know that she was Rachel.
Signals.
Yeah, signals, yeah. Whatever you want to call it. All right. Yeah. So, he bought the Lilas, and then when night came, so Omra. So Rachel said to herself, says, Hashto, nirsefach time, my sister is going to be terribly embarrassed, mm-hmm. right? Because of the fact that I'm getting married and she's not, and I'm supposed to wait until she gets married mm-hmm. first. So she's going to feel very bad, and I'm going to hurt her feelings. So therefore, what happened? Besartihu nihalo. So I'll give these simonim, right? To her. Right. So that, what would happen? So that Yaakov would be deceived by the fact, you know, that he thinks he has the real article, right? He thinks that
actually,
he really has Rachel.
The
Hainu Nitziv, and this is then why the Pasuk then says, why Yehiba Boker, that when he came morning, Yinehi Leya. Behold, who was in bed with him? It was not Rachel, but it was Leya.
It's too late.
Yep. So Miklal, from this we can infer the Ad Hashta Lav Leahi, that until this particular moment, right, she was not Leah. Elo Mitok Simonim Shemosu Rachel Leah Lo Havi Yoda Ad Hashta. But the very fact, you know, that she had given these, you know, special signs to
Leah,
so he didn't know until this moment, you know, that actually it was Leah and not Rachel, whom he had married. So, because of the fact, you know, that she was so concerned, in other words, for her sister's mm-hmm. feelings, this is what he means over here by Tzni Usa in this particular case. So, Lefichon Zochsav Yotzim Menishol. So, this is the reason why she was worthy enough, she merited that Shaul should be descended from her. All right. Then, who was the second person that we talked about? We talked about Shaul, the fact that he had the schus of being an ancestor of Esther, right? Matznius Hoyesovi Shaul. So, and what was the case of Tznius and Shaul? Nirsevi says, it's written. It's written in Shmuel Aleph over there. It's written, Yes, Devaham, Lucha Lohi Gidlo, Asher Omar Shmuel. Okay. The first encounter that we had between Shaul and Shmuel Hanovi was the fact that Shaul's father had some donkeys that had gone astray. And so he sent Shaul in order to go out and find them and bring them back. Okay? And Shaul went to one place, another place, and so on. And, you know, he wasn't successful, but they told him, you know, that if you come to this and this place, Shmuel is going to come to here in order to make a sacrifice and give a tish and you'll be able to be notified to him, and because he calls him the Ro'eh, in other words, the person who is a seer, okay? He can see, okay? Not sir, but seer. So he comes to him, and not only does Shmuel tell him, you know, where the donkeys can be found and where they will be found and returned, but also he took out a pach, in other words, he took out a small jar of oil, olive oil naturally, and he anointed him secretly.
Oh,
and
oh,
he anointed Shmuel secretly, right, and he said, I now anoint you as king. But since, you know, nobody in the kingdom was aware, nobody in Israel was aware of what Shmuel had done.
Huh.
Okay? So afterwards, Shmuel comes back, you know, home, and the donkeys, Baruch Hashem, have been returned. Everything is hunky-dory, right? So it tells him, you know, all about the fact that he met Shmuel and so on and so forth, but he never told his father about the fact, you know, that he had been anointed as the first king.
On what
of
basis
Israel,
did the Shmuel anoint him?
Oh, well, because the Spirit of God told him that. Rachelikim. What had gone before, if you remember, was the fact that the people came and they demanded from Shmuel a king. And Shmuel tried to dissuade them in every way. He told them the king is no good. He's a tyrant. He'll take your sons and daughters away from you and put them into his own particular service. And, you know, that's not right. But the people didn't want it because they said, we want to be like all the other nations. All the other nations have kings. We need a king also, okay? We should be like all the goyim, okay?
Yeah.
Like all the nations, okay? So, you know, so the Rebbeinu Shel Olam told Shaul, all right, enough. You said your piece, you tried to do your best, but at this point, give in to the people. So this is why he didn't know.
God designated Shaul did Shmuel do the...
No, it was through the Spirit of God that Shaul was anointed as king.
Yeah,
right.
I mean,
and then afterwards
was
there was a whole great big convocation of the people, and, you know, then he made it official, okay.